Digging in the dirt. Digging in the dirt.
This is Digging in the Dirt with Kevin Gallagher, where Kevin and his guests dig a little deeper into today's issues surrounding the environment, farming, gardening, and food.
And today on Digging in the Dirt, I have two guests in the studio, an unusual thing. Usually it's by phone because everybody's so all over the place in this category. But my guests are here in the studio. Welcome, Kelsey and Christy. Can I hear you? I just want to make sure I can hear you.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
We can hear you. So my guests are Kelsey Brennan, currently a farmer at Wakeman Town Farm in Westport, Connecticut. She studied sustainable agriculture and development economics at the University of Connecticut. She completed her master's thesis at Virginia Tech on Shenandoah Valley grassland ecology. Her long-term goal is to help develop agricultural policy that can make intensive, large-scale farming more ecologically responsible. She's highly interested in community engagement around food production. And my other guest is Christy Colacerto. She's the events director for the Wakeman Town Farm, author of the Connecticut Farm Table Cookbook, a cookbook she co-wrote about 4 years ago. It pays homage to hardworking Connecticut farmers and talented local chefs who support them. She is the former co-chair of Wakeman Town Farm. She currently spearheads culinary and other programs at the farm's new facility called Tim's Kitchen. Just a little background, the Wakeman Town Farm Sustainability Center is an organic demonstration homestead dedicated to serving the Westport community. The farm is a model facility created to educate the community with local healthy food production, responsible land stewardship, sustainable practices, and community service orientation. Activities include educational workshops, student internships, after-school environmental clubs, children's summer camp programs, growing fruits and vegetables, animal husbandry, providing a farm stand, and even a CSA pickup location. Well, once again, welcome, ladies.
Thank you
for coming up and talking to us about what you're doing down there. So maybe we'll start with you, Christy,
and tell
us a little bit of background on that. I don't know if many people know there's a farm that exists right in Westport.
Well, so the funny thing about that is that Westport has been originally an agricultural hub, and our farm is a third-generation family farm that was there for many, many moons. As the elder couple started to get on in years, they decided that it was a little bit too much for them to handle. So all of the cornfields and what have you, they wound up basically saving 2.5 acres as a homestead, and they wound up selling the rest of their farm property over to the town of Westport, and that the town of Westport turned it into fields.
When did that happen?
That happened in like the late 70s, I believe.
Okay.
And so for quite a while, this property, about a 2.5 acre parcel, was laying fallow. And the town got together and said, you know, as all of these farm properties are being turned over and basically built upon, you know, one more humongous house after another, the town took more of an interest in trying to save this property and from development. So a grassroots group of people got together and they said, what are we going to do with this? We want to keep it as something for education for the community. And that was sort of the humble roots. And you'd mentioned an organization called GVI, Green Village Initiative, and they were instrumental in spearheading this way back in the beginning. So I've been involved for about 8 years now, and we have seen what started as like a really sweet idea turn into something that is actually a huge, we call it a community gem at this point, because people from California and other parts of the country who come to our area are looking for something like our farm. There are very few and far between in this part of the state, especially in Fairfield County. So they come to the farm. The kids do all kinds of things. Right now, we're in the middle of our farm camp season. In the morning, we have about 30 kids there, and they work on, like we talked about earlier, a little bit about animal husbandry. They learn about organic farming practices. Then in the afternoons, we take what we grow in the gardens, and we have a culinary camp. And so it's we kind of complete the circle. So the kids,
wow, cool.
Yeah, they start from seed and they go all the way to plate, and they come home and talk, you know, tell their parents that they were making, you know, butternut squash pizza,
and they know what a butternut squash looks like.
They know what it looks. These kids are actually really savvy too, I have to say. They their parents are big supporters. We have a really nice farmers market in Westport, the Westport Farmers Market, and it's all organic, very hyper local. All of the farms that are actually, you know, allowed to participate have all been heavily vetted. And so that's another. We've got a really strong, for a small agricultural community that was once large, we're a tight community. And to me, it's a real shame that it's not bigger. You know, when I see all the cars in the Stop and Shop parking lot, you go, I don't get it.
Yeah, you know, support your local farmer.
You should all be here yeah. because it's the freshest, it's the most delicious, it's the safest. You know, we know the farmer, we know their practices.
Well, maybe it'll come around. It sounds like it's popular. It sounds like people are really embracing it.
People are embracing it, and shows like this are amazing because helps us get the word out even more.
Sure, that's why I like to do it. We always have locals up and down the state coming in. So, Kelsey, you're the farmer there.
Yeah,
you just started there?
Yeah, I've only been there for, I guess, maybe 2 months now, something okay. like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, and I've never been such an opportunity to just experience this like sense of community. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just so much rallying around the farm, and so much just hands on deck, people that want to help out. Mm-hmm. It's incredible. It makes my job so much easier because I get there and have a project in mind, what needs to get done, and there's just a bunch of helping hands of volunteers.
So what are you doing? So give us an example of what you're doing. What are you growing there on the farm? First of all, how much acreage are you growing?
We have 60 vegetable beds, and they're raised beds, so it's not super high intensity production, but we do have a huge variety of different things.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know where to begin. We have beets, tomatoes, you know, all the main vegetables you could think of, squash, lots of herbs.
Beets, stuff like that.
Yeah. any vegetable that you could think of. And there's volunteers that come. We have open hours on Fridays. People show up, believe it or not, at 7 a.m. and can stay till about 10. And then on Saturdays, we have our farm stand at 10 to 2. And people mm-hmm. show up around 9 a.m. and stay till 1 to help out with all different projects on the farm.
So are you growing some of the stuff that's on the farm stand, or that's coming from other farmers in the area?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we grow everything that's on the farm stand.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And what's the CSA part of it? Is that coming from farms around the area?
Yes. Yeah. The CSA we help facilitate, but that's from other farms. We don't produce enough to do our own CSA, but there's other farms that we collaborate with.
And anybody can come down and join the CSA to take advantage of it?
Yeah, I believe that would be, Chrissy, is that from Stony Acre?
It's I believe it's called Stone Gardens. And they've got their own subscription, and it's just we're a local drop off
and
pickup point.
Yeah,
makes
sure.
it easy for people.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. But just anybody could email us, get involved, wakemantownfarm@gmail.com would be a good place to reach out to. Mm-hmm. You could just show up to the volunteer open hours, or if you want to come at a different time, then just email us and we could always arrange that. There's usually somebody there. And yeah, there's lots of fun projects going on with volunteers. Just this past week, we are helping to improve our pollinator garden because we're part of the Pollinator Pathway, which is a network of habitat that has pesticide-free, safe habitat, tons of flowers for different pollinators. So it's meant to be like a connected land network, and we're a part of that pathway. So mm-hmm. we are just doing a lot of native plantings this week, and it's fun because volunteers can come be a part of that and watch it grow, the perennials that'll be there.
The long-term project for the bees.
Right, yeah.
Very cool.
Which we also have bees, which is really fun.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we have a couple of hives. We're hoping to expand. And actually, it's interesting. There's a raspberry section of the farm that hasn't been super productive in prior years. But since they started beekeeping in close proximity to the raspberries, it's just been a bumper crop of raspberries because they're getting so much pollination. Yeah.
Pollinators.
It's really amazing. And people who have been there for longer have seen the difference in the raspberries. It's like, wow, bam, you put bees there and now you have tons of raspberries.
Yeah,
so just the impact of pollinators.
I'm worried about the bees. You know, you see less and less. You know, I have a lot of pollinating plants in, you know, in my garden. And I see some of them are not attracting as many bees as before, but that's suburbia, you know, and suburbanites tend to poison their lawns, which poisons everything. So
yeah, or mow down the dandelions, which are a great initial pollinated nectar source for the bees.
They are.
Early in the season. You could leave your dandelions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, give the bees a good head start.
We have KK's the farm here who has a dandelion festival every year over in Long Island, and they celebrate the dandelion. So they have dandelion wine, and they take none of the dandelions out of the farm.
I love dandelion tea.
Yeah. Chrissy, what about some events you got? What do you plan there that people are attracted to?
So we've got one of our biggest events and the most family fun events is this weekend. It's called Family Fun Day. And it started out small. We wound up with about, 200 people who, the first time we did it. And now it's grown to the point where we've got about 700 people that show up on. It'll be Saturday,
wow,
and we're starting to plan because we hear it's really going to be hot Saturday. But it's a super fun day, and everything we do at the farm when it comes to families, we try to do things really low tech. So when you come to the farm, you won't find things like bouncy houses or typically, or people dressed up in character. do a lot of things that are farm related and also things that are maker related that you can use with your hands. So, you know, we'll be doing things like making your own pickles, and we'll have making and painting your own birdhouses. We've got our own hoedown grill. We've got a lot of stuff. We've got a Melissa and Doug toy company. They come and host a fun. They do a lot of toys surrounding farm themed toys. So they've got a booth there. It's just a super fun. We have a farm Olympics, and usually we've got a farmer in overalls directing things like family tug of war or sack races and things like that. It's just very low key, low tech, but just super simple. And that's really
that's
who
cool.
We are.
Old fashioned stuff.
Exactly.
A lot of that mechanical stuff nobody does anymore, right? They're just all thumbs and screens, right?
Well, that's the big thing for us at the farm. One of the reasons I got involved, I had a teenager when we first started, and it was driving me crazy seeing all these kids that were never looking up from their phones and never actually interacting with one another. And then it came to me that part of it is they have a hard time looking at one another and conversing. So when they get into the dirt and when they're doing things with their hands, they start to actually talk to one another and they really come out of their shells. And we found over and over, not just with our teens, but we've got a lot of differently abled populations that come to the farm. And we find it super therapeutic for them. And it's, I feel it when I get to the farm. Your blood pressure goes down. You just sort of exhale. You walk around. You see the birds, the butterflies. We've got some animals on the farm. We've got a really cute alpaca, a couple of sheep, a couple of goats. We've got really cute ducks waddling around. And it's just a very sweet place to be.
Sure. Yeah. In my garden, when I'm out in the garden, all worries go away. And when I come out, I'm tired and everything is, good. There's a lot of studies that say the soil inoculates you, too. You're releasing all the bacteria and things that are in the soil, and you become, you may not develop allergies and things just because you're dealing with animals and soil and plants.
And not getting sick, too. They really talked about that. I know my son, who was really interested in farming as a young kid, I'd see all these kids in his class who were constantly getting different kinds of illnesses. And, he was always in the dirt, and I really attribute a lot of his health throughout the years.
And not wiping those wipes all over you and everything, getting rid of the bacteria you actually need.
Exactly. So we do a lot of hand washing at the farm, but we're not really into the whole antibacterial craze.
Sure.
And all of that. So we actually have a farmer who, her name is Farah Masani, and she's a really cool person. She hails from India, and she's got a lot of different and sort of time-honed farming techniques. And one of her practices is she likes to get into the dirt, not just with her hands, but also with her feet. And I don't think I've seen that before. It kind of takes all kinds. So when someone brings a new or old farming technology to the farm, we try it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when you are planning out what to grow this year in all the raised beds, are you going to you did it from seed?
Yeah, we did a lot from seed.
Do the kids help you out, or the community helps you out in getting everything rocking and rolling, ready for the soil?
Yeah. Yeah? Absolutely. So many people helped out. It wouldn't be possible without volunteers. There aren't enough actual staff.
Mm-hmm.
It's just volunteers make up the farm. It's really incredible. I'm still amazed by it every day. I feel like I get there and it's just unbelievable. I feel so lucky that there's so many people that are there ready
to get involved.
And yeah, people have everyone from, I think there were some 3 and 4 year olds in the camp that were planting some of the lettuce. And now this week, our campers are more like 6 or 7.
Yeah, they're
they've been planting as well. And we have tons of teens, adults, everybody.
Sure,
so
I think people
have
really wanted it.
That is absent from most other facets of our society now. It
sure.
really feels like a village in some regard.
Sure. Yeah, sure. Also, we've had a show here on agri-hoods now. That's getting to be a good deal. Like, there'll be 30 homes, and one lot is considered the garden where everybody pays in, sort of a CSA, but it's the community's garden. And that's a kind of...
It's a great model.
It's a great model. It makes sense. It should be everywhere, right? You know, sort of what GVI here in Bridgeport's been doing. They have several plots insinuated throughout the community of Bridgeport, and they're growing vegetables and everything, and it's their choice too. They're growing collards, whatever they particularly want to grow, and they work right side by side with Ellie the farmer here in Bridgeport. She's really cool. I have to introduce you to her.
I'd love to meet her. Yeah, that's great. I think that's what the farm's trying to do, is act as an example and just like a model for what could be going on everywhere. Like, there could be neighborhood farms everywhere, and
sure.
every town could have a farm. I think that would be a great
thing. I think people really want it. They want healthy food, and there's something satisfactory about growing it, don't you think?
I think that's one of the cool things too that we teach the kids. It's a lot about patience And so, you know, they're learning things sort of, you know, throughout the process. So it takes a while from, you know, from seed to, and then seed has to germinate. And then we have to deal with things like, you know, the weather, pests, you know, we've got all kinds of critters and things. So, you know, when they finally go back into the garden and they're starting to literally see the fruits of their labors and they're eating things off the vine, it's super rewarding for them. And the fact that it does take a little longer, it's not instant gratification. That's something a lot of kids aren't really exposed to these days. So it's a nice lesson in that as well.
Sure. My grandson comes home and from school, and we babysit him maybe a couple of times a week. And when he comes in, right away he goes, I want to watch the TV. We go, his grandmom says, no, we're going out to the garden. And we let him water, and we let him have these kids' scissors to snip things. And then eventually he finds a cucumber and can I pick it, you know, or, you know, and I tell him, don't pick the green tomatoes, you know, but it's all like,
unless you want to saute them. Sometimes that's nice too.
Yeah. Not at this stage. Later on when you can't get them to turn red, I'll do that. I'm waiting for the red ones.
Yeah. I agree. There's a lot of gratitude be gained from farming.
Sure. Sure. And it's good to get if you don't expose your children to it, they're never going to know. They're never going to understand that there's that whole aspect of life is growing things, even if it's an ornamental flower garden.
And you know what's interesting? We started we've been running new camps for kindergartners through fifth grade for a long time, but we realized based on some of our events, the people that were coming to the events were moms with strollers, and then, you know, one baby in a baby Bjorn and another one in a stroller, and it really dawned on us that we had to start doing things for the really younger kids. Mm-hmm. And one of the teachers started out her class, and she said to them, let's do something with the alphabet. And she asked them to, this was a culinary instructor, she asked each one to come up with something with the letter of the alphabet. She got to the letter K, and these kids were saying, you know, kale, kohlrabi, you know, and they were so astute.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Their moms are getting them involved really, 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 or they're hungering for this. So it's great to be able to provide a place where they can see this and participate and then bring it back to their house.
Right.
You know, even people with a tiny plot or just a container, we do a lot of things like we'll do workshops on container gardening, square foot gardening. So you don't have to have acres and acres. You can just have what works for your property and your family.
Right. My philosophy is grow something.
Grow something.
Something. So we're speaking with Kelsey Brennan, the farmer at Wakeman Town Farm, and Christy Colasurdo, the events director at Wakeman Town Farm, and that's down in Westport. You can hear they got a lot of stuff going on. Christy, is there stuff for adults too? You have adult things going on?
Oh my God, that's one of my favorite things is what we've been developing. It's really a sort of an extension of what I've always been interested in terms of the merging of the interest in farming and the chef world. So we've been able to do a lot in terms of culinary at the farm. We 2 years ago, we created a space called Tim's Kitchen. And in Tim's Kitchen, that allows us to bring in, it's a beautiful space, more beautiful than we ever would have imagined. We were just looking for something sort of very, very simple. But we were able to, through the generosity of people in town, we were able to solicit the donations from folks of appliances and all kinds of things to outfit the kitchen. And now we're able to bring in a variety of local chefs. And one of my favorite things that we do at the farm is called the Intimate Chef Series. And we run that about, you know, once a month or once every other month. And we'll bring in someone, for example, we've got Frederick Kiefer, who is a local chef who I love because he really does exemplify that relationship between a farmer and a restaurateur. For many years, I've known Frederick, and he's from France, and you know he's sort of espouses a lot of the farm-to-table ethos in what he does as a restaurateur. And I know back in the day, he would work with local farmers and say, listen, I want something that it's not necessarily readily available. He would go to Patty Pop's Sport Hill Farm up in Easton and say to her, I'm looking for, you know, purple potatoes or whatever it was. And, you know, these farmers were listening and they said, okay, this is, you know, as we want more heirloom varieties of tomatoes and we want things that are a little more unique and different, hailing from all parts of the world. And also flavor profiles, people are using more and more things globally. So, you know, it could be the flavor profiles from Asia or South America. But so for us at the farm, it's really fun. We do these Intimate Chef Series dinners. Usually it's about 30 people. The chef comes in, does a multi-course meal, and we have cocktails in between. And it's really cool.
Wow, because, sounds like fun.
Oh my God, they're so fun. And what's great is it's the communal experience. So we're all sitting together and you're kind of, you know, plunked at a table with people that you may never have met before. And by the time you leave, you know, you've had a fabulous meal and you've had wine and, you know,
you supported the farm.
You supported the farm and also, you know, this great new chef who you may really not have known about his or her background and what, you know, how hard it is for them to do what they do because, if you're running a restaurant, it's not easy to put something on your menu. It's very difficult to source something, you know, that you're probably going to run out of.
Sure.
And so we've got really quite a few chefs in our town, and Bill Tybee is probably one of the ones that first comes to mind. But we've got some amazing people who have said, you know, this is what it is. This is what it costs to get really amazing food, whether it be shellfish, whether it be you know, other types of seafood, whether it's grass-fed beef. I mean, these things are not easy to get. They're not cheap, but they're absolutely worth it if you care about what you're eating and you're going out. Maybe you'll go out, you know, a little bit less, but you'll go someplace and it'll be really worth it. And those are the types of experiences we want to bring to people.
We're
going to
get all the good food subsidized, you know.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Not the junk food.
That's right.
And
right.
Then everybody could have
the corn.
Yeah,
subsidize a little less ethanol and corn for animals.
Yeah. So let's talk about that then, Kelsey. You, in your long-term goals, you say you want to help develop agriculture policy that can make intensive large-scale farming more ecologically responsible, and that's something we talk about here on Digging the Dirt a lot. What do you mean by that? What would you like to see happen?
Yes, well, even if just a matter of getting voters and just people more interested in agricultural policy as a voting topic and to be more aware of candidates' plans for the farm bill, I think that's really important because we're just kind of chugging along here with the same policies that have been put into place by lobbying entities, essentially, and they're not necessarily what's best for the environment or for the United States. And a lot of people don't realize, I think, how much corn we know. Everybody kind of knows that there's a lot of corn being grown in this country, but a lot of people just can't even fathom how much it actually is and where it's going. So one of the first things I like to say to people, just to get them to ground themselves in the reality of how much corn is actually in this country, is the landmass of California, the square footage of California, is quite comparable to the square footage overall in the USA that is cultivated in just corn. That's not even accounting for the soybean and the wheat. So just imagine the state of California, a little chunk of it, saying that there's a little bit less, but then swung across the United States, just planted in corn in different locations, primarily in the Corn Belt, in the flyover states throughout the United States.
And all subsidized.
Yeah, and it's because
and
of things like
GMO.
Crop insurance. And it's GMO, and a lot of it goes, about 40-50% goes to ethanol, and 40-50% goes to animal feed. And the rest goes to things like corn syrup or all the other functional ingredients that we need corn for. But a lot of it probably isn't necessary, the ethanol, for example, because many of those studies that have been pointed to justify ethanol as a viable biofuel, they're saying ethanol is better than fossil fuels because it's less carbon impact. But they're not accounting for the opportunity cost of the carbon sequestration that could be going on in that land. So if that land wasn't being annually tilled, if it didn't have all of those inputs, like the nitrogen fertilizer that takes a tremendous amount of heat and pressure to produce, and then as much of which is volatilizing off into nitrous oxide, which is a potent greenhouse gas, there's all these other factors. And then the downstream effects of where is that corn ultimately going? To an animal that's in a concentrated animal feeding operation, producing methane, and the manure is producing methane, and they're not on the soil, interacting with the soil microbiome and improving the soil ecosystem, which would attenuate some of that greenhouse gas production. So a lot of those factors aren't being considered in those meta-analyses that are justifying ethanol as a viable biofuel. And I think people need to be more aware of that and be asking politicians and people that are involved in making policy what they're going to do about that, because that just doesn't make sense anymore.
Well, it sounds like you know what you're talking about, and also it is a real problem. But, you know, I think most people say, I just want to fill up my tank, Kelsey. You know, they're not really interested in the issues, unfortunately. That's why we do this program, so that maybe you inspire somebody to get interested in the corn issue, because it's not just corn. There's lots of problems in the agriculture area. But I agree with you that we have to change big ag to get any real change. You know, that's really without the help of the big interests, we have a big problem.
Even if a small fraction of those subsidies went to supporting local, incentivizing more local farming, agroforestry, grass-fed agriculture, if we could just move the needle
loans
towards
to buy a farm.
That direction.
Yeah, loans to buy land and farm. Those are really important things that don't get done.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, We're running out of time here, so I wanted to ask Christy a little bit about her writing that you do. You know, you have done a lot of stuff about food and chefs and stuff like that. So tell us a little bit about chefs in Connecticut that we don't know.
Well, not so much that we don't know, but one of the things I recently, about 3 years ago, I got interested in a project. It was called the Connecticut Farm Table Cookbook. And what was so fascinating to me was not just the chefs, but the chefs' relationship to the farming world, and how difficult it was for them to sort of make this all work. So I traveled the state pretty much from all the way down from Greenwich, all the way west to the Litchfield area, then all the way up towards Groton. And whether it was Norm Bloom, who was doing his own oysters in Copps Island, in shellfish beds that have been around since the 1750s, to chefs that have a little bit more celebrity cachet that you might see on the Food Network, let's say. We've got a lot of big name chefs here, in our area. For example, we just recently had Matt Storch. He owns a restaurant called Match. He's got another two restaurants in the Westport and Fairfield County area. We just had Brian Lewis from the Cottage Restaurant. He was just on Beat Bobby Flay. I mean, these are guys who are, moving and grooving in those circles. But what I find fascinating about them is they all take the time to work with the farmers. Brian Lewis from the Cottage, he had just put something on a menu that he did one of our recent Intimate Chef's dinners. And he was talking all about the kelp and the seaweed production that was integrated into one of his dishes. And each of the farmers, using his or her platform and celebrity cachet, they're able to kind of elevate what's happening on the food scene and the agricultural scene in Connecticut, and sort of creating these little pockets of interest, whether it be in, we've got a honey sommelier named Marina Marchese, who is amazing, and she's got a little property in Weston, but what she's been able to do out of this property in terms of creating different types of honey based on different flavor profiles. She's got something that's with the lavender tint, and she will teach you all about why it's so important. And when you go to buy honey, and people say, "Well, this is costing me more," this is real honey. This is not the garbage that you find in the grocery store.
Yeah, it's been adulterated with sugar. A lot of it.
We've got amazing cheese producers in the state, and also not just our own state, but if you go up a little further into Vermont and New Hampshire, and I consider local food sort of in a, let's say, 100-mile radius. You've got some on Long Island, which is, again, dwindling. But I think it's, for me, writing about it and bringing these people, putting the spotlight on them and shining a spotlight and really applauding them for what they do. It's important to me because they're helping keep this alive, and they're also letting people understand that it doesn't have to be precious food. It doesn't have to be. It's not. No one's really trying to hose you by having an expensive meal. The bottom line is, if you want to eat well, in some cases, I remember I was working for a food company called Gray's a couple of years back, and we were bringing in beautiful chicken from a family farm in Vermont. The chicken was actually more expensive in some cases than the beef. But the chicken was real chicken, and
it
tasted like chicken. And so it's hard
like D'Artagnan, right? Good chicken.
It's chicken that's free range, that's been out and been basically, eating amazing things and, berries, nuts, and what have you. And we're starting to lose touch, I feel, with the taste of real foods. You go into the grocery store, you pop open a clamshell of tomatoes or what have you.
And strawberries.
And they have zero taste. And I think that, it's really sad. I remember what strawberry picking with my family and what that tastes like out in Bridgehampton. And my parents are Italian, and my father, we used to grow figs. We used to go out in the Long Island Sound and basically dig up our own steamers and get our own little nicks. And I feel like our kids, I don't want them to lose that. Mm-hmm. And so for me to
stay close.
Yeah. So let's talk about it. Let's write about it. Let's sing their praises, because they're really in the trenches fighting the good fight. Because there's a lot of people saying this is really expensive. But that's, sort of besides the point, because you can go out and have almost very close to that price point, but garbage.
And if they could produce more, they could drop the cost down. And that means you need to have people who want to buy it. So in this show, we always say vote with your dollars, support a local farmer. Grow your own because it tastes better. It's better for you. But if you can't do that, you should be able to do at least a container or two. But if not, then go ahead out and support a local farmer. Find a farmer, find a CSA, and get involved so that you have better food for yourself. Kelsey, what are you going to do for the fall? Are you planting anything now for the fall to come up? Or what's your plans for the farm going forward?
Well, I just planted some rutabaga, and we've got a lot of beets on the way because I'm personally really into beets, so I had to get some golden beets and the rainbow stripes beets and red beets. But also just redid a bunch of arugula. Probably got some broccoli rabe in the works. Yeah, pumpkin. Yeah. I have a pumpkin patch initiative. I want to do a bunch of pumpkin.
Yeah.
Tons of winter squash.
How about the Long Island cheese pumpkin? Are you growing into that?
Oh, no, I looked at that.
You should. They're rescuing it in Long Island. A woman who comes on this show, Steph Gaylor, her farm is the Invincible Summer Farm out in Long Island. And they're the ones who resurrected the Long Island cheese pumpkin. It used to be the pumpkin until they went with the Halloween-style pumpkins. But it's a much more flavorful pumpkin.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Yeah, much more.
I can get my hands on some seeds in time.
I think they're
beautiful, too. They're funky. So I think some people are scared of them, but to me, they look so cool.
Look like a wheel of cheese.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're really cool. Yeah. I'm totally into heirlooms, and we've had quite a few people on here. We talk about all that kind of saving seeds. Seed saving is a big deal. Seed sharing is another big deal. You know, maybe you guys want to do a little seed program down at your place, too.
We actually have the initiative started, and we have the most amazing library in Westport. And both Westport and also one of the Fairfield libraries nearby, they've started to build up a more robust program of seed saving and seed sharing.
That's awesome.
So it's really cool. The first time I went, I couldn't believe you could really just go and, you know, take a little bit from this and take a little bit from that. So it was no cost. But the idea for us too is to keep saving. We had a really interesting woman come to the farm recently, and she's trying to bring back, revitalize the Southport Globe onion, which was indigenous to our area and was a huge crop for us in Westport. So, you know, there are people who are doing this. She actually works and has been to like many of the seed banks. People don't understand how important it is to save the variety. These monocultures are really scary. I mean, what happens when, you know, we're all eating the same banana and there's a blight or so this is the one banana. What's going to happen?
Yeah. All bananas come from one banana tree. Did you know that?
No.
It's true. And they have a blight right now, and they're worried about it.
We should be worried, really worried.
We might not have bananas.
They should have learned from the first time that all the bananas were wiped out.
Well, my experience is that mankind seems to think they know better, than Mother Nature. And Mother Nature always wins out in the end, So it's better to work with Mother Nature than to work against it,
Absolutely. Yeah. That's why I'm really into this idea of forming an ecosystem where the Corn Belt currently exists, and maybe putting some trees, doing like an agroforestry type thing, grass-fed agriculture under tree canopy with some understory crops. I think that could be a really amazing carbon sequestering, harvestable ecosystem that is totally possible.
Sure.
It's just a matter of policy to get it there.
I love your optimism, Kelsey. From your lips to God's ears. But, it's a lot of work. We got to just convince a lot of minds. But, with things coming up here that are going to affect us, like climate change, there could be an opportunity to get some policies passed because, we're going to have some real struggles in the near future, in my opinion. So
wrap it into some policy.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's carbon sequestering.
We can cure this problem, but we have to do it. We have to have the will, and our politicians have to have the will to go forward and change things. And some of it is agriculture policy. You're right.
And I think we need some more young people in the political arena because it speaks to them. It scares me for my kids to think that so many of these things are going to go, the way of the dinosaur. I mean, especially when there's something we can do about it.
Yeah. No, we can do about it. And you know what? Nature is amazingly resilient. It will rebound if we allow it and we help it. And there's now, people are very sophisticated on knowing how to change it back and allow it to blossom again. It just can't keep pouring more on. That's what they, out in Iowa in the Corn Belt, the guy said, they're morons. They just pour more on.
Oh, that's great. I'm going to take that with me.
I was talking to a farmer at my nephew's wedding, and he was a corn farmer. And he was so proud that he just put in windmills, turbines to amongst his corn. And he's the one who told me that story about, they're just morons.
Yeah, more nitrogen.
More nitrogen.
Indigenous, more
right.
than they
well,
need.
Well, we could go on and on with this subject. You're speaking to the choir here with my audience and me. So thank you so much for coming. Kelsey Brennan, the farmer at the Wakeman Town Farm, and Christy Colasardo, the events director at Wakeman Town Farm. You guys seem like you're doing some good stuff down there. Keep it up. Before we go, tell everybody, where can they reach you? Where can they find out more information? Where can they come to the CSA? Where can they sign up for the special dinners?
So the easiest way to reach us is to just go on our website. We also have a Facebook and Instagram, but it's wakemantownfarm.org. And take a look, because we've got a really robust set of programs for both adults and for kids. Just go navigate through the tabs, and it's all there. Everything's automated, and we find that the way we do everything is grassroots. So social media is huge for us as well.
Sure.
That's how we get the word
and
out.
Keep in touch with WPKN.
You could just show up at the farm, and especially right. at our open hours, Friday, 7 a.m. to 10, and Saturdays about 9 a.m. to 1 p.m.
Yeah.
And whenever you want to show up, that's the important point also, is that you can drop in. There's no commitment. It's not like you have to sign up to be volunteering every weekend.
Just go see
so
what
just
you're
pop
doing.
In whenever you can. It doesn't have to be the beginning of those hours. But yeah, just come by, talk to us, and we could even work out volunteer hours that are outside of the open hour times.
Tell them I heard you on Digging in the Dirt.
Absolutely.
Yeah, come
thank
on
you.
Down.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Please
and keep in touch. Send us stuff too, so we can alert the people in
Family Fun Day Saturday, 11 to 3.
Yeah, good. Good. See you there.
Digging in the dirt. Digging in the dirt.
You've been listening to Digging in the Dirt with Kevin Gallagher.